there are some people who go around calling themselves skeptics who are cynical and who are sort of out to debunk and immediately dismiss. And I think that I don't fit that mold at all.
Ladies and gentlemen!
You know, what I want to do is find out what the real answer is. And I'm not going to assume it's paranormal. I just want to know what the answer is. So I think that you'd be surprised how many of us would jump up and down and have parties. We would be so excited. Because we want it. We want it to be real. So I think we both have to move away from our comfort zone, our edges, towards the middle, and not be so so stuck in the mindset that we're in. We definitely have a lot to learn from each other. Go to the skeptic convention, and we think the opposite. We think
okay.
that the world is overrun with paranormal beliefs and ridiculous nonsense being fished out as truth. Yeah, we see us as losing.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. This time around on the program, we have a bit of a landmark edition of the show, as after 220-plus episodes of the program covering everything from Bigfoot and the Bermuda Triangle to meat-eating horses and the Michael Jackson death hoax, for the first time ever, we welcome a bona fide skeptic to the program as we venture into the realm of the skeptics with our guest Sharon Hill, creator and editor of the outstanding website Doubtful News. Over the course of this conversation, we're going to be discussing skepticism, of course, and skepticism's mortal enemy, the paranormal. And we'll try and find a sliver of intellectual landscape that may be able to harbor both worlds. We're going to talk about the nature of skepticism, the long-running feud between skeptics and paranormal enthusiasts and researchers, squabbles within the skeptic community over religion and other topics, how the paranormal misuses science in an ill-informed way, and Sharon's thoughts on ghost hunting, cryptozoology, ufology, and conspiracy theories. Additionally, we will smash the fourth wall and ponder the state of the paranormal media and the mainstream media covering the paranormal, as well as the very amusing and strange road which led to Sharon's appearance on BOA Audio. Plus, of course, tons and tons more. Altogether, it is a spirited but respectful discussion about the skeptical perspective and how it is both strikingly similar as well as vastly different from paranormal research, with an honest advocate for solving the enigmas which puzzle us all, Sharon Hill. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Sharon Hill, please allow me to provide you with a little background on her. Sharon Hill has been an active member of the skeptical community since 1993. In 2006, she began her blog, Doubtful, which covers topics related to paranormal happenings, cryptozoology, anomalous natural phenomena, science and society, and general skeptical goodness. Her day job is as a geologist and policy specialist, and she has a master's degree in education, specializing in science and the public. Additionally, she runs the critical thinking news site DoubtfulNews.com and writes a web column for the Center for Skeptical Inquiry called Sounds Sciency. Her website is, as noted, DoubtfulNews.com. Pretty simple, all one word, DoubtfulNews.com. Check it out. And with all that said, my friends, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on January 24th, 2013. Sharon Hill, provides a skeptical perspective on BOA Audio Season 7.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. We're going to be venturing into some very interesting territory this week. Our guest is writer and researcher who specializes in effective skepticism, science, media, and the public. She's the editor of the outstanding website, DoubtfulNews.com, which really just came to my attention in the last, 10 days. And I've been a faithful visitor ever since. It's a really amazing website. And as I said here in the introduction, she is a writer of skepticism. She's a skeptic. And we've never had a skeptic on the show before. That's why we're sort of venturing into this brave new world. But really, if you kind of break down the program, I'm as skeptic as they come on a lot of this stuff. I'm, flabbergasted by the whole pursuit of answers that's going on in the world of the paranormal. And I, having read a lot of her stuff, Sharon's stuff, I'm amazed that we really are closer than people might think. So I'm excited to have this conversation. Welcome to the program, Sharon Hill, editor, as I said, of DoubtfulNews.com.
Oh, thank you. Very pleased to be here.
Now, we generally start out with the bio, the background. You know, tell people who is Sharon Hill and how did you get interested in all this? How did you end up it's interesting, flesh out a little bit about how we've interviewed hundreds of people at this point, and I'd say 95% of them fell onto the other side, if you will. So it's interesting to see sort of your evolution, because a lot of people, they got into the Time Life stuff and, or sightings or in search of, and next thing you know, they were ufologists or cryptozoologists. And it's like, there wasn't really that kind of thing for skeptics too much back in the day.
Right. I always knew that I was going to be a scientist when I was growing up. I was an avid reader, and the first books I remember reading were haunted houses, ghosts, monsters. I could remember getting them out of the library, that 001 section of the library where all those cool books about UFOs and paranormal stuff were. So I've always been interested in it, and I was always interested in nature, so I pursued science through my high school career and became a geologist, and I've since pursued finished a master's degree in science and the public, because I realized what I really loved to do was to talk to the public about understanding science. So about 1992, when the internet was just sort of warming up, we had text-based browsers at that time.
I remember that, yeah.
I started searching stuff on the internet, and I was researching ghosts and Bigfoot and dinosaurs and things like that. And I came across skeptical literature for the first time. And it was quite satisfying because I've been interested in evolution. Being a geologist, I was interested in evolution, so I was interested in the debate about how that was, creationism was pseudoscience, as they called it. I was reading Stephen Jay Gould, and he would often write about, pseudoscience topics, and it sort of just evolved from there, understanding what the difference was between, a proper scientific approach to an issue and something that was maybe faith-based or belief-based.
Yeah.
And I started reading more of the skeptical literature, and I found it really satisfying because it seemed to dig into some of the questions that maybe were nagging at me. One thing I didn't really care for, and it took me a while to realize this, I didn't like just story after story after story. You read these ghost books or these cryptozoology books, UFO books as well, where they're just witness stories, telling the stories, and the author retells them. And I found that very frustrating because it takes a lot of assumptions in that. You have to assume that the person is telling the story correctly, you have to assume that the writer got it correctly, and you have to assume that everything in it is reasonably true. And I really couldn't do that because as a scientist, I was looking for better evidence than eyewitness testimony, which is really unreliable. So the skeptical literature was more about the reason and the science that we have behind these things and what the better explanation might be, the alternate explanation that was not paranormal but had a basis in reality. And then I was led to research things about paranormal investigation groups and eyewitness testimony and establishing scientific research protocols. So Yeah, it's been always learning. Always learning. So I've been to both sides. I mean, I've been through all the standard literature, and then I went and looked at the other side. And I think that's incredibly important. You should always look at the critique of what you believe in to make sure that you fully understand it.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. That's something, you know, well, there's lots to unpack about this, about skepticism here, especially, in light of, we look at the whole of paranormal. Let's talk just, I want to clear up the kerfluffle over the year in review episode because I thought it was hilarious because 2 years ago we offended the true believers by not caring enough about, or not giving credence enough really to these stories. And then 2 years later, somehow we offended you by accident for, I don't know exactly.
Well, I started Doubtful News in response, actually. I'm going to probably offend somebody else, although this is not uncommon knowledge. In response to another website that reports on paranormal news.
Okay.
Because I was frustrated. All they ever wanted to report was the paranormal aspect in these crazy stories. And at one point, I even started an online discussion group where it was more of the critical people, but it also included people like Jerome Clark and other paranormal researchers. And we were discussing these topics that were on this news site. And I just came at it from a different angle, I think, and I wasn't satisfied. So when I was, when I had some time, after I'd finished my master's degree, I said, I really want to do something different. I want to create a website. So I asked my friends if anybody had been doing this sort of website where you took these really cool stories, because I'm a news junkie. I love those, you know, Fortean stories and the weird news and stuff like that.
Right.
And really looked at them in a more skeptical way, in a critical way, because I mean, people see so much online and you don't know what to believe. And I wanted a way to discuss these stories with other people, maybe try to figure them out from a different angle, maybe the angle that was missing from what the media was giving us. So I started this website and I tried it for a little while and it took off and it's been going ever since. I mean, I spend a lot of part of the day looking for news stories. People send me news stories. I'm just a news junkie. I love that stuff. So that's what I started. So I rarely miss news stories. Mm. And I want to follow up on them because I want to know what happened. So if there is a news story about a UFO sighting, I'll try to follow up with that story and I'll have to like set a Google search or something like that because often that second story, maybe the explanation, doesn't get as much press as the first story.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Well, that brings me around to the germination of our actual conversation tonight, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, we had put out the year in review episode just to catch people up who heard it a couple of shows ago, and the point on the program over and over was that these stories never get the follow up, and really. This has been the theme for the last few years, that these are garbage stories, that they're just, there's been no good stories. And so you wrote to me asking me about if I knew that these stories had been followed up on.
Right.
And that's when I discovered your awesome website.
It takes some effort to follow up on these. It really does. Like, take for example the group of kids that went to the Congo to look for Mekele Mbembe.
Right.
That was a good story. I followed it from the time that they got the Kickstarter campaign going and then they got funded and I actually had a discussion with the guy who had started it and I told him I'm a little bit concerned about this because do you guys really know what you're doing? Do you have scientists on board? And that's when I found out that they did not seem prepared. And about 3 months later, I think you even discussed this on your show, you wondered what happened to them. I looked it up, and I found the blog of somebody who had been on the expedition, but when they got down to crunch time, he was told that they didn't have enough money to bring him along, and things just didn't go the way they were supposed to go. So he did follow up on the story on his blog and say that they ended up coming home and not getting to do what they wanted to do. And I think they even had some equipment stolen, and they weren't able to get the right permits to do what they wanted to do. So I couldn't get, unless I contacted the actual person, which I couldn't find him because the website was down. The only way I could find this out was through some sort of back channels and really dig in and look for it. So It's hard to follow up on these stories.
That's the problem, I think, and I'm in agreement, I guess. What threw me off was that at the time you appeared on this program. I'm trying to remember the name of it here, Virtual Skeptics, and sort of took us to task for proselytizing these tales. But really what we were doing was lamenting the lack of follow-up to the whole thing.
Well, you guys are saying it was a bad year in the paranormal news, and I thought it was a great one.
but we were cheering for different resolutions.
I guess so. I thought it was a great year in monsters, and it wasn't a good year in ghosts. And you're probably right, it wasn't a good year in UFOs. But it was a great year for monsters and really strange stories like giant eyeballs and weird carcasses washing up on the beach, which I just love that stuff. So that was fun to me, and I guess it was because I was really paying attention and I was searching for the stories that I thought it was a fun time.
I've gotten to the point now where I'm exceedingly cynical, in the words of my friend Greg Bishop, to this whole field, with a point where I just, unless, you know, we've hammered this on the show a bunch of times, and unless like this next UFO story is the actual breakthrough story, I don't really care to hear the story.
Yeah, you know? I know what you mean. I feel the same way about haunting.
You can apply that to almost all the fields,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, and you know, what's the next Bigfoot letdown?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is why I say we're actually in, in much more agreement than may be the case.
Yeah, I think that people get a mistaken impression of skeptics. There are some people who go around calling themselves skeptics who are cynical and who are sort of out to debunk and immediately dismiss. And I think that I don't fit that mold at all. Being a paranormal believer at one time and then evolving. And I guess, you know, what I want to do is find out what the real answer is. And I'm not going to assume it's paranormal. I just want to know what the answer is. So that's why I tend to dig into it a bit more, and I'm critical about it because I don't want to be fed a pile of nonsense or lies. I want to know what the real story is, and if the real answer is mundane, if it's boring, it's still interesting to me because it tells me about the people who experienced it as well and about the culture.
Well, actually, that's a good point because I also wanted to give you props here for, as you say, you're a former paranormal believer, and you can kind of get that in the coverage at Duffel News, because you have, like, the George Fawcett obituary, and it's not all snarky or anything like that, and you'd think that a run-of-the-mill skeptic-type website would just not even mention it. So, I mean, it's a sign of class, I guess you could say, so I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to appeal to a broad audience, and there's no reason for me to be offensive, although there are some topics that I feel extremely strongly about, and I don't hold back the snark. So, and some people take me to task on that. But there are some stories that, because I cover the whole entire skeptical type of interest, I will do stories on homeopathy or alternative medicine, things like that. And that really bothers me because people are harmed, physically harmed by it. So I do get angry with that.
Right, right. Actually, that's a good sort of jumping off point, sort of, I'm sure you've kind of heard this argument in the sense that it's like, so what if somebody believes in Bigfoot or believes some crazy Bigfoot story? You know, what is it to you that this person believes this story? Why do you care? Why can't you just let them believe it?
Right. And I do. But I'm not going to try to argue people out of their beliefs. That's definitely not my job. We all have our worldviews, which is, you know, shaped by our beliefs and how we see the world. I'm not there to argue people out of it. I just want to get people thinking about it because I can't convince you if you hold a belief. I can't convince you otherwise. You have to convince yourself. So if I can put that kernel of question into somebody and say, well, you know, I'm not really sold on that because of this, that, and the other thing, you know, what do you think about that? And it starts them thinking about that. That's what happened to me. You know, I saw a little bit of doubt in what I was reading and followed up on that because it made me curious, and then realized I had the mistaken ideas before. So you have to do this for yourself. You have to figure out how you see the world and how you interpret things. I'm certainly not going to do that for you. So I don't really like when skeptics are out there trying to proselytize and say you're an idiot for believing that, because smart people believe all sorts of weird things.
Yeah, that's the truth. Just look at all the major modern religions. It's
Sure, and we're never going to get rid of that. That's the way our brains are. That's we just gravitate to belief. Some of us believe things differently than others, so that makes the world go round.
Exactly. Yeah. What I think one of the interesting aspects of skepticism is that it's you've kind of got this challenge of proving a negative in a way. You've got to show that it's not, that this story didn't happen, or this isn't the way it is. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, because it's easy to jump to a fun conclusion. And this happens with a lot of news stories. They'll get put out there, and you know the old tale of a lie goes around the world while the truth is trying to tie its shoes. It's hard to undo a good story that goes around. And then you have to sort of pick it apart. And one thing I found is that people who are particularly good at sounding sciencey, it's really hard to explain to somebody what's wrong, because there may be a kernel of truth in it that's just warped in a different way, and you have to try to explain it and undo it at the same time. It's really difficult. I did a story for the web column that I have, which is called Sound Sciencey, about this special water that you buy in the grocery store that's supposed to, I mean, there were claims that this cured cancer.
Oh, God. Just recently?
Yes. It was. A few years ago, it was marketed as this type of water that was actually filtered through peat, like peat moss, but it was peat. And it was made of these acids, humic acids that was in the water, supposedly very healthy for you. And when I read the stuff on the bottle and I did some research, I went to the websites, and it sounded so sciencey. And if you checked on some of the facts, they were actually true. But they were warped or applied in a way that were deceptive. But unless you really dug into it and looked carefully at it and understood some chemistry and big words and stuff, you'd never know that they were pulling a fast one on you. And that makes me really upset when I do see that in the media, because you do see these pseudoscience types who, we often see this coming out of, you know, these Russian media sites and sounding very impressive, and they're pulling a fast one on people. They're not really scientists, and they're not saying things that are acceptable to the rest of the community.
See, then that raises an issue that I had here in the notes, which is you say one can't get away with self-labeling his or her expertise in science.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe I meant here as science, but isn't that kind of like they don't have the people who do these studies, these, you know, we're not talking about these bad people who are selling snake oil here. Let's mm-hmm. sort of, you know, mosey this back over to UFO researchers and
okay.
Bigfoot researchers, because the people who are selling those drinks and shit, that's like completely, you know, they're just bad people. They're not like misguided and actually think that this is working. I think they're actually just jerks. So, you know, we can kind of write them off. We don't need to get into their brains. But the, you know, the UFO researchers and the Bigfoot researchers, they're not allowed into science. So they have to create their own science.
Mm-hmm.
That's their perspective. I guess I maybe argue that for them. You know, I can kind of see that point of view. They've been marginalized. Science may have done its studies on it, but they have conflicting opinions, and they're not really allowed into the science to sort of share that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that whole idea?
There's when you're talking about amateur research and investigation groups or individuals that are not scientifically trained, that I actually did a whole master's thesis on that, where I looked at different groups online. I looked at 1,000 different groups online, and I stopped at 1,000. There are more.
And I looked at each of their websites, and mainly I got ghost hunters and UFO groups and cryptozoology groups and some general parapsychology groups that would look at psychic claims and stuff like that, Freudian claims. And I looked at how they used the word science on their website or in their promotion. And I also then looked at if they actually had scientists in their group and if they followed what would be considered a scientific protocol. And about over half of the 1,000, 57%, specifically noted or suggested use of science as part of their approach to investigation and research. And almost none had actual scientists on them.
These are like mostly ghost hunting groups, right?
They were mostly ghost hunting groups, correct. Yeah. They were the majority because that was really a trend.
That's like the insane clown posse of the paranormal, though.
That's what I hear.
You know, they're juggalos. No one takes them seriously.
But here's the thing. They really wanted to help people. Some of them were.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Some of them were demonologists, and they carried around their Bibles and their psychic intuitive with them. I mean, they had a scientific based protocol. It was nuts. But many of them were completely sincere, and the thing is that they wanted to do it the right way. They wanted to, and they really didn't know how, because really the only way you learn how to do good science is by having someone right there with you all the time saying, you're doing this wrong, you have to do this better, this isn't acceptable. When you're in a scientific community, like doing lab work or field work, you always have people criticizing you, not in a bad way, but just to make sure that you get better and you fix those mistakes and you close up those holes that can mess up your conclusion. And it's really tricky, and it's not pleasant. I mean, it's a lot of work. So I think that these amateur researchers are in it for the right reasons, for sure, but they just aren't aware of what you really have to do to close up an investigation and make it tight so you can get to these conclusions.
Okay, so it's almost like your real issue is that they're not using the word science, it's that they're actually claiming to be using science.
They do it both ways. They use the word because they think they should. And I blame television for this. a lot of people do mimic the ghost hunters on television. Also not scientific, not at all science, and it's a TV show. In addition to that, who do people see representing science? They see these people on TV. They see scientific stereotypes. They see scientific symbols. And they think that that's what science is and what it represents. And if you really ask people, you know what science is or how it works, they can't really explain it. It can be part of our education system. You know, we're not really well trained in how to do science. But like most people think that science is from a textbook and it's never changing and we have absolute proof. And that's the complete opposite of what it is. You know, it's always being revised, and textbooks are always out of date, and we're constantly getting new information and tweaking theories and coming up with new hypotheses. So it's really not what people expect, but then they go and they act like they think they should act, and they do things they think are the right way, and they miss really important parts. So, you know, they're using these symbols and languages about science, and gadgets and technology is equated with being scientific, that's not it. So yeah, it gets confusing, but I think that there is a lot of room for improvement. And when I did write my thesis, and it eventually did become an article in Skeptical Inquirer, I did sort of suggest that I think that there's a way, if we can manage to work together, you know, bring some more scientifically minded people in with some of these paranormal groups, if they want that, you know, sometimes they don't want that, we might actually be able to solve some mysteries and come up with some really interesting stories and answers.
Well, that's a point I wanted to kind of make, too, you know, as this conversation went along. I feel like there needs to be a bridge here between the two camps. Mm-hmm. The paranormal and the skeptics. You know, maybe this program can start that.
Well, no,
we'll build the bridge.
And I'm really glad that you asked, because that's what I want to do. I don't get invited. I get invited to skeptical conferences to speak. I know everybody, and they pretty much know what I'm going to say. I don't get invited to paranormal conferences.
Neither do I, so don't worry. Don't take it personally.
Sometimes I go, and I just, I don't come, I don't wear my big S, you know, big red letter S for skeptics. Or, you know, I just ask questions, and I talk to people, and it's really enjoyable, and it's extremely educational, and I like to do that. So I wish that there was a way to get us more involved. Now, from what I understand, are you familiar with Dragon Con?
Yeah, that's down in Atlanta or something?
Yeah, the big science fiction convention, science fiction fantasy in Atlanta, and they used to have, they have a skeptic track and they have a paranormal track. And they used to have an opportunity where the two groups would sit together and discuss. And after a while, the paranormal people stopped sending representatives. Nobody wanted to go. The skeptics were all sitting there going, let's talk about this. Let's have a discussion. And the paranormal side just sort of dropped out. And I kind of saw that when I was there. I was there last year, and I went into some of the paranormal track sessions, and I started asking some questions, and everybody put up their defenses. It's as if they would finger me as skeptic. You're not welcome here. I was doing this, and I wasn't being unpleasant. All I was doing is asking a question. Like, well, you've got these 20 years of ghost research you say you have. What are you going to do with that? Because it isn't available to anybody else. Are you going to share it? And they gave me a funny look, and they said, oh, yeah, we're going to do something with that. We're all going to get together, and we're going to discuss it, and we're going to have a committee. And I'm thinking, you had 20 years. I don't think you're going to do it now. They weren't even talking amongst themselves, let alone having their stuff together to present it to anybody else. And I think that if they did present it to somebody else, like somebody a little bit more critical, and even if we say, look, you messed up your protocol here, this isn't right, they can take that back and do it better the next time. And that's what I think that's what I think that the paranormal people can get from the skeptics. What the skeptics can get from the paranormal people is a heck of a lot more understanding about what people believe and how people see the world that's different from you, because we need that understanding.
Right. We touched on a couple of interesting points there. We've hammered these on the program too. I've likened it to this. If the ghost hunting thing, if it was actually working, then we should have figured it out by now, because the sheer amount of manpower of all these groups going out all these different weekends cultivating evidence, we should have something tangible enough to break this story open.
Absolutely. Same thing with Bigfoot, I hate to say it. We've been looking for that guy for 50 years, and we're not getting any better information. Well, that's arguable, but with the ghosts especially, we're not getting anywhere.
I agree on the ghosts. I don't know what's going on with Bigfoot research at this point. So
nobody knows.
Yeah, it's well, I was talking about this with Adam Davies. It's sort of gone into the realm of DNA now to kind of bridge that group between the paranormal and science, you know. Mm-hmm. They sort of have to get the acceptance. Now, there's a bunch of points here I've sort of picked up as we've talked. Now, I talked earlier about how you know you're saying that you can't label yourself a science, but maybe you'll know this, maybe you can explain this to me, but you know, you say you got your degree in geology. Didn't, like, back in the day, the people who first started studying these rocks, didn't they not have any sort of, like, place within the scientific community at first? And then they were like, well, you know, we gotta call ourselves something, because I can't just keep saying, you know, you and you and you and you, you know, and eventually it became a science.
You're exactly right, and it wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was just sort of like the Victorian age, you know, the time of around Darwin and the first fossil hunters. The dawn of geology was, you know, not that long ago. It's just a couple hundred years ago when usually wealthy men had some spare time and they were interested in nature, and they were naturalists and they studied nature. And then we realized that they could make a living out of this. That because they really had nothing else to do. If they were independently wealthy, that's what they did. And they studied birds and they studied rocks and they discovered fossils and they tried to figure it out. And after a while, science did become organized, and they decided that there were these people who were more expert than others, and it didn't take long before that was sort of codified. You know, there was now special training that you needed to be a naturalist, or usually with medical training to be a scientist. When that happened, when there became an official title, a scientist, the amateurs were then closed out. Wow. And that happens today, where if you do not have official training, a degree, something, you are closed out, you're not considered a scientist. And again, that's arguable, because everybody could use the tools of a scientist. Everybody could do their investigations in a scientific way. We don't all need special microscopes or telescopes or special machinery to go out and study nature, or discover a new species in your backyard, which happens. There's lots of citizen science projects where people are sitting at home on their computer or outside with their telescopes discovering new things. But what they then do is collaborate with real scientists in university and academic settings to double check that information and then get it out to everybody else in the community who checks it, and then it gets distributed. That is definitely missing in the paranormal community. Any topic, it's missing. There is very rarely a connect between the researcher who's out looking for cryptids and an actual scientist. In some cases, there may be, especially in cryptozoology. I guess that's really a bad example, because a lot of cryptozoologists do have experience with wildlife biology and things like that. But for ghost hunters, forget it. They don't go to any psychologists. They don't go to any physicists. They don't seem to connect at all with real scientists. And that's a drawback, because they've stagnated for 20 years and not done anything that's been important and got us any better knowledge.
I don't disagree at all on these ghost people. you've found the punching bag of the program. Hold on a second here. You know, to get back to the sort of idea that I was talking about earlier, is building this bridge between the two communities, it does seem like maybe the two points of view have been battling so long, neither seems to have come to on top, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe both of them are wrong. You know, maybe it doesn't have to be a black and white sort of thing. Maybe it can be a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, for example, if somebody says that there was a cryptid sighting, and you have the scientists, I shouldn't even say scientists, I'm going to say somebody who's more scientifically minded, doesn't even have to be a scientist. This is somebody who's going to approach this from an evidence-based view, and then you have somebody who already believes this cryptid exists and is looking for it in that area. They'll approach that issue from completely different directions. One assumes one thing and the other assumes something completely different. And if the skeptic goes in saying it's a mistake, or it's a person in a suit or whatever, that's a mistaken assumption. And if the cryptozoologist is in there assuming that it's the well-known cryptid, that's also a mistaken assumption. We have to start with the basics and say, what, if anything, happened? And then figure out the evidence and the facts, and then take the conclusion from there. You can't start with assumptions. So if I think we have a lot to learn from each other in that case. And when it comes to people talking about their eyewitness accounts, they've had an experience. And I'm not going to discount that, because that's their experience, and they're affected by it. So going in and the paranormalist person would be completely sympathetic, because maybe they've had the same type of important experience, whereas the skeptical minded person would come in and maybe be a little bit more cynical. So I think we both have to move away from our comfort zone, our edges, towards the middle, and not be so stuck in the mindset that we're in. We definitely have a lot to learn from each other. Soften up a bit on both ends.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what this is all about here, this conversation. Because I've lamented that this stagnation, I mean, talking about like not just cryptids, but UFO research is completely stagnant. And I've been mm-hmm. talking about this for years and years and years on the show. I feel like there needs to be like this fresh start. I wish the scientific end, the real science, mainstream science, would take a fresh look at this. But it feels like there's already this sort of ingrained black versus white argument about that mystery and other mysteries as well.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I wonder if maybe changing terminology or coming out with a different way of naming and categorizing the field would be different, because we're so stuck in those ideas of like UFO equals
right.
Extraterrestrial flying saucer. And it's not that. I wonder if we change the name, we can approach it in a different way. Because I love hearing stories about anomalous aerial phenomenon. You know, let's call it AAPs, right? Because somebody sees something. We don't know what it is. Let's find out what it is. I want to know. I want to know what it is. I'm fascinated by, like, earth lights and ball lightning and earthquake lights. I love earthquake lights. So I think that there's something to this, and I would think that maybe finding a way to take a brand new look at it would get us down the path towards some sort of new information.
Right, exactly. I've advocated for this sort of fresh start PR sort of thing. It's really, you know, I have this in the notes here. It's the skepticism, a lot of it does revolve around semantics in a way.
It does.
And it's a difficult sort of thing to get into, because after a while you start talking about what the definition of is. And it turns into this whole thing, and then it's like, well, we're so far askew from that guy in the field who saw that thing that we're not really necessarily actually looking at that anymore.
Right, and I think that's another case of coming more towards the middle, because the paranormal people do not do a good job of defining the problem specifically. And you have to do that. In order to get a good answer, you have to have a good question first. So I don't think they do a good job at that. On the other hand, the scientific-minded person may say, this is physically impossible. What happened? You said what happened is physically impossible. You're mistaken. Instead of saying, you know, maybe there's some wiggle room here and we got to figure out more of what happened. So there's definitely that you can get stuck on both sides. You can get stuck. I see the ghost hunters stuck in some strange ideas about, EVPs and electromagnetic fields and this stuff that, things like the stone tape theory and just ridiculous stuff that they need to get a better explanation, a better handle on this in order for anybody to take them seriously, because there's no basis in reality for what they're saying. If they can dig into that and figure that out and come back with a more reasonable idea, then maybe scientists won't entertain that. But when they stick to those old, tried, and they're not true, they just don't work out, we just stagnate. It just stagnates, and nothing new gets found.
Exactly. Well, I feel like there's this, you know, for me personally, I feel like there's this sort of like root mystery at the base of all of these things, but now they've become so, they've collected all these barnacles over the years that don't actually, that lead you astray. You know, it's like a tree. There's this root at the very bottom of it that makes sense, and then all the branches are the ones that confuse you, if you will. That's confused me, in a sense.
I sort of see that as like, it's because it's part of our culture. These experiences are part of our culture, and they're shaped by culture. I wonder if that's what we're seeing. We're seeing these beliefs grow through time and through changes in the culture as well.
And I think I think earlier you made a point, you know, that the paranormal is contingent upon belief in a huge way, and that's an extremely difficult sort of thing to, if you're a skeptic, to combat.
Right. I like to think of things in terms of worldviews. You know, worldview being the whole set of interacting beliefs and opinions that you have that shape the way that you see everything in the world. And if you're a religious person, that's part of your worldview, you will see things in a different way. If you believe in the supernatural, you'd interpret things in a different way. If you're more scientifically minded and you see everything in terms of black and white evidence, then you're going to see things in a different, you're going to interpret things in a different way as well. So, like, for example, if you believe in things like magical medicine, you know, or you believe miracles can happen, or if you're going to use an alternative cure, and then the other person is going to say, nope, I'm just going to stick with what the science says works. I'm going to go with the conventional treatment. I don't understand people. As a scientist, I don't understand people who would go for these untested treatments to try to cure their cancer. To me, that's insane. But for some people, they're totally believing in that because that's their worldview. They believe that could happen. I can't deconstruct anybody else's worldview. And I can only maybe pick apart little bits. If you think of it, your worldview is like all these little pieces in a puzzle. You're not going to discard the whole puzzle, you know, all at once. If you pick out a couple pieces, then eventually the picture changes. It's very rare where somebody just discards their whole worldview, you know, like one big throw everything out and replace it with something else. Sometimes that happens. People become atheists or whatever, but yeah. For the most part, that doesn't happen. it's a slow process of picking apart the little bits and pieces, and then it becomes easier to throw the whole thing out and reconstruct it. So, in terms of worldview, you know, we all have our own individual way of seeing the world. So we sometimes have a hard time talking to each other because of that. You know, I can say something and there's no way you're going to accept it because that doesn't fit with your worldview. And I'm not going to be able to get anywhere. So I'm not sure, you know, again, it's an individual process. Everybody has to sort of work on it in their own way if they want to. Some people don't want, some people are real happy with their worldview and they're not, they don't want to change it. They're happy just to see it out.
Especially the people that have spent like 20, 30 years looking at stuff. They're not going to change
their
worldview.
That's actually a very different point. When you're emotionally invested in something, say like the more professional people who made their livelihood as parapsychologists or as cryptozoologists, it's going to be very difficult for them to discard or, I see them change over time. I see their views change over time, but I don't see them discarding it, in one fell swoop very often.
Right. That's human nature though.
Mm-hmm. You have to be open to change. I'm a big advocate for change. I think you can grow as a person, but you have to be willing to change to do that.
Now, how about this sort of perspective? It's from the skeptical community. I don't mean you specifically. This is just sort of the sort of perspective from the paranormal side. You get the impression the skeptical community, they're sort of like so vehemently against this stuff. But it's like, why are you so mad? Because you're winning. You're winning the hearts and minds war, I guess you could say. Like no one, the paranormal is ridiculed beyond belief. It's like it's you know. It's worse than the nerdiest of the nerd stuff. It's like you're even.
Are you saying that because you believe it, or are you just setting up a caricature?
What do you mean?
Do you really? Is that?
No, this is how I think that it's portrayed by people. You know, by people in the media.
Go to the skeptic convention, and we think the opposite. We think that the world is overrun with paranormal beliefs and ridiculous nonsense being fished out as truth. Yeah, we see us as losing. We're never going to eradicate ridiculous beliefs in witchcraft and miracles and stuff. So that's interesting, but you see what I mean? I mean, I remember you talking about that, saying that the paranormal is ridiculed. But it's really not, because look at how popular it is. I mean, they've got these thousands and thousands of people going out ghost hunting and camping out listening for Bigfoot every weekend. More so than ever before. We have the internet, we have these internet groups, and it feeds both camps because like you go and you look for people who think like you, and you form these communities, and especially online made that really easy to do. But Yeah, the skeptics say, oh, we're never going to eradicate. But there's still people who believe in astrologers and all this stuff. And it's funny that the paranormal side thinks that the skeptics are winning, because we don't think that at all.
Well, let me put it this way. You and I go into a bar, and, you know, a separate from each other, and I tell the bartender I run a radio show that talks about UFOs and Bigfoot, and he looks at me askance. And you go in and you say you run a website that, you know, clears up all this confusion over UFOs and Bigfoot, and, you know, I think you get a decidedly more positive reaction.
Well, I think that depends on his world,
too. I guess that's true. I guess that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, because it's such an interesting topic, and I realized this when I was researching the paranormal amateur investigation groups, because science, like we talked about, sort of gave up on UFOs, and we don't investigate haunted houses. We used to. We don't anymore. And we don't believe in Bigfoot. There aren't too many scientists seriously looking at Bigfoot. But the public is fascinated by these subjects, and they sort of see them as a realm of science. And science isn't paying any attention, they get mad. So you see these petitions online saying the government should disclose what they know about UFOs, and scientists should investigate these sightings, and scientists aren't doing it because they've given that up a while ago, but the people think that they should be investigating that. So I think that people have a role that they think science should play, and, you know, we should be looking at that. I think we should. I mean, I would if I was in the research field, and a couple do, but not that many, because it's an interesting issue, and people want you to pay attention to it.
Right, because I recall this sort of conversation between myself and Jacques Vallée about this, where it's, you know, it actually, the persistence of these mysteries, in a way, to some people, gives science a bad name, because science apparently cannot solve them.
Mm-hmm.
They still exist. People are still seeing UFOs. People are still seeing Bigfoot. And I know we talked about trying to prove a negative, but still, there still hasn't been any definitive answer to what this is. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think if there were previous old paranormal mysteries that they figured out, but I can't come up off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, at one point we thought meteorites weren't real.
Well, there you go. See?
Yeah.
It's frustrating, I guess, on the part of the people who take this seriously, don't want, you know, are tired of the circus of the paranormal community, and wish that the scientific community would come over here and help us figure this out, because the people who have been trying to figure it out are doing a shitty job.
Mm-hmm.
That's my personal perspective.
How would that happen?
We got to build this bridge.
Yeah.
We got to get to work.
You're right. There's no bridge right now that we could cross over to each other's side. It's very difficult. We get so stuck in our own little worlds as well. But, yeah, because I'm of the opinion, and I'm, you know, on the other side, that the paranormal community doesn't really want people over there telling them they're doing things wrong.
No, I agree with that. There's a certain backlash towards codifying paranormal study.
Mm-hmm.
It's people don't. I think I talked about this with Adam Davies. There's also this sort of, there's this weird sort of like Wild Wild West pioneering thing. You know, it's like people, it's like panhandling. You know, they for gold, not like in the streets and singing and
mm-hmm.
stuff. I guess that would be busking. But anyway,
it'd be panning.
There you go. And I think everyone's sort of, or a lot of the researchers, and this doesn't go towards ghost hunting. I've completely written that off as sort of a serious endeavor at this point.
Okay.
So I'm talking about UFOs, and really UFOs and Bigfoot. We haven't even got into conspiracy theory. Maybe we should talk about that a little bit. But they're all sort of trying to get their big payday. Not in the literal sense, or possibly, but you know what I mean. They want to be the one that breaks the story. They want to be,
right.
You know, they want to be the Newton of UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, they don't want the help. It's kind of weird like that in a way.
Yeah, they're sort of mavericks. You know, they feel that they could cut through everything and blaze the trail.
Hmm.
Yeah.
They want the credit, you know, for being the one that solved the mystery.
Sure. And that doesn't work very well because science is the most best thing we have to getting reliable knowledge, the scientific process. We don't get other ways of knowing, like revelation or, you know, people from authority telling you this is the way it's going to be. That usually fails. But when we use a scientific process, using the evidence built up over time and getting the answer more and more refined through time is the best way we know to understand nature. So that concept, that community is, it's a community activity. It's always involving more people. It almost never involves just one person. And we hear about this a lot, like this, you know, scientist was a pioneer. And that happens, but he always had people before him that built some steps or built the path that he walks on to take the next step. So it's definitely a community issue now, because you have to do peer review and you have to have people check your work and you have to have other people replicate it. So there's definitely a sharing aspect. One thing I didn't see in the paranormal community when I looked at it was the sharing aspect. They were all very closed about their stuff. They didn't want to share it. I don't know why. They didn't want people to tell them they were doing it wrong, or, like you said, they just wanted all the credit. It's not going to work because you just get so mired in your and fall in love with your own ideas, you don't realize how off base you are unless you subject that to critique.
All right, now how about this? Let's get a completely different sort of avenue to throw at you here. You're in the skeptical community. You know them well. And I find it interesting. I'll be honest. I've checked out your Twitter a few times since you messaged me, and I noticed that there's plenty of squabbles within the skeptical community.
Oh, yeah.
Just like the paranormal community. You guys aren't so much different than us. We're really quite alike. That's the frustrating part. You know, it's the zealots on both sides that I can't stand. Oh, Jesus, now I lost my train of thought.
The current issues with the skeptical community are... I don't think they're different because they sort of stem from the same root. We have the internet open up an entire new way of communicating. And now anybody can go online and talk to people who think like they do, or they can spend their time arguing with people who don't think like they do. Now, both communities have grown tremendously because of the internet. I'm convinced of that. The skeptics are huge across the country and internationally. We have skeptic groups everywhere. We meet in pubs, and we have skeptic camps, and we have workshops, and we do all sorts of activities. And I think the same thing happens to these paranormal groups. They're getting together. They're doing investigations on the weekends. They're going on tours and trips. And when you have that kind of community growing, you're going to have growing pains. And I think that we're seeing that with the skeptical community, because think about this. I mean, when I say I'm a skeptic, or somebody's a skeptic, what do you think of? You think of an old white guy. An old white academic is the typical curmudgeonly skeptic. The skeptic community doesn't look like that as much today. It's got a lot of women, a lot of young people, and even some minorities in there. And we start squabbling because the rules are a little bit weird. Now, there's been charges of sexism or discrimination. That happens throughout society. I mean, the society has gone through this issue. And if I go to a Bigfoot conference, guess who's there? A pile of old white guys.
Exactly.
So I think that as they grow, they're going to experience those types of growing pains as well, you know, as women come in and become interested. And as you don't have a lot of minorities involved, you know, people of different cultural backgrounds. It's not happening yet, but I think that you're going to have those kinds of squabbles as well. It's just a little microcosm of the big society. You're going to have those issues, and you're going to fight for power and control and leadership.
Well, what are you all fighting about? Because isn't the answer no to everything that that the people on the paranormal side say? So what could you be arguing about? Where to go to dinner?
Oh, it's very interesting. There's a couple of spats. There are spats of, I'd say the main spat is about, atheism.
Okay.
I am of the opinion that skepticism and atheism are two completely separate things. You can be a skeptic and not be an atheist. You can be I know a lot of atheists who are not skeptical. Skepticism is a process, and the way you apply your thinking to solve an issue. Atheism is a conclusion. You've made your conclusion, I'm not going to believe in God.
Right.
That's not the same as a skeptical process. So there is no overlap. There is an overlap, but there is no, it's definitely two different things. So what the skeptic community will argue about is including being a big tent. Do we want to accept people who are religious but who are advocates against alternative medicine, or who definitely don't believe in UFOs or want to promote science education? And it can be a little bit uncomfortable because there are very adamant skeptics who are adamant atheists, militant atheists. And they make religious people feel uncomfortable. I refuse to do that. I refuse to discriminate against religion, because that's a personal choice that you've made in your belief system. If I can help you decide that you should vaccinate your child and not fear autism, that's my goal. I don't care what you do on Sundays. That's not really the thing. So that's the number one problem we have, is atheism and what they would call accommodationists, people who accept religious people into their idea of skepticism. The other problem we have is, what's important to spend our time on? Some people think that I waste my time talking about Bigfoot and ghosts and UFOs because that's silly and nobody believes that. We should be spending our time either trying to eradicate religion, which is ridiculous, or spending time on alternative medicine treatments that are actually killing people. You know, people who die of cancer because they don't get the correct treatment. Or kids who die of diseases because their parents don't get them vaccinated. So a lot of people feel that that's the thing you should be focusing your time on. Don't bother with all this other stuff. So, and then we're also struggling with dealing with feminism issues. With the influx of a lot of younger women and men, we're having an issue with getting the kinds of speakers we want at events, proper representation, fair treatment, things like that.
Yeah.
So those are the big things.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's unfortunate, but...
I think it's inevitable.
I guess you're right. The train of thought that I lost has pulled back into the station.
Oh, great.
Now, you're familiar with this skeptical community. What do you think the reaction would be if one of these mysteries turned out to be true? If it was like somebody hit a Bigfoot with their car, or, I don't know, a ghost got stuck somehow, like that Bill Cosby movie, Ghost Dad, you know, the ghost was there. It could be proven somehow, you know?
Well, I think the easiest thing to imagine would probably be actually finding evidence of Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's small.
Probably the most plausible. I mean, there's more plausible cryptids, but...
Because if a UFO crashed, that's a whole different, like, kettle of
that
fish.
That would really...
I mean, that's
think about it this way. If a UFO crashed and it was extraterrestrials, that would be so earth-shattering.
That what the skeptics have to say wouldn't even... Yeah, it would be like...
I mean, we'd all be floored.
Right.
But the idea of a Bigfoot isn't going to change people's view of the world too much. You know, it's sort of like a mystery that if it shows up, it would be really cool. But it wouldn't make people jump off cliffs and commit suicide.
Right.
Or something like that. You know, like we were being invaded by space invaders. So I think that you'd be surprised how many of us would jump up and down and have parties. We would be so excited. because we want it. We want it to be real. I think that when we were kids, you know, we always, a lot of skeptics often grew up as believers. We wanted it to be true. So, you know, inside of us, we're still hoping that it is. We've just come along this path too far and we're a bit disappointed. And maybe we've just opened our eyes and said, oh, gee, it doesn't look good. So I'm going to just live life as if it's not going to happen.
That's how I live. Yeah.
If it does happen, definitely willing to change our minds. There are very few people I know who would not be extremely excited to find great evidence of Bigfoot.
Now, do you think, though, then, that the skeptical community, of course, there will be different perspectives from a whole bunch of different people, but do you think that there might be a wave, then, of people who are like, kind of like going back to what we talked about earlier, hey, let's take a second look at this. Let's take a fresh look at this. Are these other things, maybe we were wrong about, you know, the Loch Ness Monsters to carry on the cryptid theme.
Yeah, I don't see that as much because I see these problems as rather unique in themselves. I see the Loch Ness Monster idea as extremely different than the Bigfoot idea. For one, people see Bigfoot a lot more, and he's all over the place apparently.
Right.
He's in every state but Hawaii.
He's a world traveler.
Yeah, he's got relatives all over. So I think that one's a little bit different than Nessie has pretty much been proven to be not a monster. It's something else, and it probably has multiple explanations. But, so we're not gonna nail down one thing. If we find Bigfoot, we can nail down one thing. It's a real creature, and it looks different, or it's different than us, or different than what we know. I don't think the Loch Ness Monster is like this. I think each of these mysteries has a completely different context. So either buying into them or finding out that they're true is going to cause a different reaction. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, maybe the Loch Ness Monster was a poor example. I guess what I'm saying is I think that some people would sort of give some of these mysteries a second look, even if they only gave it a brief second look.
Mm.
Kind of would just sort of plant a little seed of doubt. Because
well,
there's a certain air of certainty on both sides, obviously. You know, I'm uncertain about all this stuff. That's what frustrates me. The people who go on these shows and are like, UFOs are real, they're aliens, the government knows. Those people drive me crazy because they cannot prove what they're saying at all. Like, I'd appreciate people. Yeah.
Exactly.
But they actually believe it. That's, you know, they say it as it's a fact, you know, and they never seem to ever, can never prove it.
Not to me. They can't prove it to me because I don't know what they know. I don't hold that same worldview. And that's why we have this frustration in talking to each other sometimes, because we're trying to do the convincing. That's not going to work.
Exactly.
I think we need to find, I do some work on coalition building. And one thing that when you're trying to get disparate groups together, or groups that don't normally work together to work together for a common cause, is you have to start by finding the common ground, common values. And we've never done that. We've never sat down with, not that I know of, that this has ever happened, where people have sat down with each other and say, okay, I don't believe in this, and you do. What can we agree upon? You know, these people have been having this experience, and, you know, these are the facts that we have to work with. No, you can't work with that facts because that's an interpretation, not an observation. You know, that we have a problem of putting our interpretations on top of observations. So the ghost hunters going into a building will read an EMF spike and say, oh, it's paranormal, it's energy, it's paranormal activity. No, it's not. It's an EMF spike.
Right.
Don't go farther than that. So we have to bring this back to really basic nuggets that we can begin with and then agree upon some rules and move on. That's a big, maybe we need a Congress, you know, bring all these, bring these experts together from both sides and sort of see what we can work out. That would be interesting.
I think it would be interesting, but there's such bad blood between the two sides.
Yeah, there is.
It's,
there's some moderates on each side, though.
I agree. I agree. I just don't care for a lot of the name calling. It upsets me.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I don't like that either. On the website, I have a very strong moderation policy on the comments. We don't run a normal website. The comments on the website for these stories means that you contribute information about the story, clarification, or a comment that you can back up. You are not allowed to go on and say, this person's a moron, you're an idiot, I will remove that comment. There's actually flags for words like moron, idiot, asshole, stupid. They'll automatically get thrown into the moderation bin because they won't allow it. We have to maintain a civil, collegial level of discussion if we're going to get anywhere, because as soon as the name-calling starts, as soon as the animosity starts, then all discussion sort of gets sidetracked. So I try to keep that out, and I'll pluck those clean out.
Well, I appreciate that.
I have to tell you this. I have to tell you this story, though. This is a funny story. Close to when I first started the website, I think it was the very beginning of I started it back in August 2011, so it was like the beginning of 2012. Do you recall the story about the house in New Jersey that people rented and they said was haunted? They ran out of the house. It was a family. They said it's another Amityville Horror.
Oh, it's another. Okay, I thought you meant the
Yeah, and there were lawsuits. They sued their landlord saying, I can't live here. There's paranormal activity. And he says, you just don't have money to pay your lease. So it ended up, this is another story that ended up being resolved. But all the people saw was the stuff that came out on ABC News about these people having their lights go on and off and their
right.
clothes being messed up. What actually happened is it got resolved on the people's court.
How appropriate.
They went on the people's court. They agreed to settle on the people's court, and the judge said, sorry, there's no paranormal activity here. You can't prove this. You need to pay your lease. But anyway, when the story came out on the website, I was very annoyed because the first person this family called in was not an electrician, not a pest control person, not somebody who was a plumber, you know, anybody like that, because they have these problems, call in a paranormal investigation team. So at that point, they're already assuming that there's paranormal activity going on. And of course, that's what the paranormal team found. That's the conclusions they came to. So I got really angry, and that sort of came out in the way I framed the story. And the paranormal team came onto the website. I guess they Googled their name and they found it and started arguing with me. The main guy from the site, from the organization, was extremely pleasant and said, I just want to make these corrections. We did call in an electrician and we do these things. And I said, thank you for coming on and contributing to this, because I can't figure that out from the news story. I needed to hear this from you, and I really appreciate it, because I like to talk to see what they've done, and I'm curious what did they do and what kind of stuff did they find. Within a day, the other members of his team, some of the younger ones, came on and started leaving comments about how I wasn't there, I'm an idiot, I don't know what I'm talking about. There were feces-flinging demons in the house, and they were harassed, and it was a horrible situation, and the house is haunted, they definitely know, and I'm an idiot. And I started replying a little bit to those, and most of the ones that were too bad to post because they were obscene, I sent to the paranormal, the leader of the group, and said, do you really want these people out in public representing you? Look at the kind of stuff they're saying to me. Am I supposed to take this seriously? Because it's just giving you a bad impression for your organization. You need to step up your game. I appreciate that you came on the site and tried to explain things to me, because this was helpful for me. I got things wrong from what was portrayed in the media. But you really have to rein in the people underneath you, because they're ridiculous. and they're making me just want to discard you entirely. So really stepping up your game and acting professional and being open to an exchange of ideas is, we got to accept that. That's the first step, you know, not being so violent towards
right,
another
right.
point of view.
Right. Well, I'm going to pat myself on the back, because that's why I want to have you on the show, because, you
yes.
know, it was like, I was kind of aghast. I was like, she thinks I'm doing something that I'm not doing at all. I don't know why she's saying these things. You know, it's frustrating. Did you ever listen to the show that you were, the Year in Review episode? Or
I listened to the Year in Review episode, yes.
Okay.
I did listen to that, and I think you guys made some really good points, and I think you were off on a couple points, and now I can't remember what it was that because I didn't write it down. I was driving while I was listening to it. But so, I mean, there's another case where I have things that you definitely hit on, and like the conspiracy theory idea. We can talk about that if you want. Talking about this is going to be the year of conspiracies coming up. You're absolutely right. It's going to be the year of conspiracies. No doubt about it.
No, I'm going to keep beating this horse because I'm a total clown, but
okay.
when you taped the episode of Virtual Skeptics, I appreciate that you reached out to me ahead of time, but I didn't get back to you in time. No one gets an email back from me within a day. I don't know how you, I don't know how you do it because 3 days is like really good. But, so when you were talking about the show, you actually hadn't heard it yet.
No, I didn't.
You were relying on witness testimony, I guess you could say?
I have a correspondent. He's a professor, and he loves to listen to your show. And he just informed me. He says, it's very strange. They're not aware of your website. They're not aware that these stories were resolved. And he gave me the examples of a couple ones that you used, Baltic UFO and the Congo thing, and I think there was one other one. But and it just so happened that whole week I was quite frustrated because I look at lots of paranormal sites to get my news because those are news junkies too, and they pick up the good story. So I look for the stories that they find interesting and then go research them in the media. And we sort of share our links amongst each other. We really do sort of pick and choose from each other, and because we all put our different spin on it.
Your website's outstanding. I feel like a jerk for keep bringing this up, but it's like
I work really hard at it because I want it to be, I don't want it to be like another site. I want it to be unique. So I think we all put our different spin on things. And so we sort of share the same types of story. And if you go to one site, you'll get a different spin on the story. If you come to my site, you'll get a completely different spin on it, or attitude about it. So, this correspondent says, it's very interesting because, and he pointed out a couple of things that you had said that we had talked about privately about how the paranormal community responds to certain things and how it's, ufology especially has changed so much and is really in decline right now because people have left or people are getting old and they're dying. You know, the major researchers are leaving and it's changing. And so we discuss this a lot and, you know, we'll discuss books that we've read. And it's, when he said that he found this interesting, I thought, I got to listen to it. But at the time, and he told me, I was frustrated because the other paranormal sites would not, I would write to them. I would give them the links to my story and say, I think that this has an explanation, and they would ignore it. I would write emails to other paranormal sites and say, look, here's another aspect you didn't notice. You overlooked this. And I would not get an answer back, and I would be ignored.
Yeah.
It made me feel like they didn't want to know the truth. They just wanted to talk about the mystery. And I found that frustrating.
Yeah.
I did get mad.
Well, don't
I got mad on that webcast.
Yeah. Quit picking on me, man. Jeez.
I got mad because, and it wasn't fair because I generalized.
It's all right. I'm just teasing you now.
Well, we all make mistakes, and I will own up to my mistakes. I do this all the time. I yell at people, and I try not to yell at people, but I do yell sometimes, and I definitely make mistakes. Every day I make mistakes. But my goal is to find out the best answer. So, I mean, if somebody tells me, we have a page on our website that says, did we do something wrong? Because we want people to come on and say, look, the media misquoted me or you misinterpreted this and I want to fix it. Because when do you find that in the media? You never get those.
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought that would be a cool thing to have. And I've had people actually come back to me and say, you quoted this media story. They misquoted me, and
here's the real.
And I will try to fix it.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, like I said, I was just teasing you. You got to be careful with these witness testimonies, though. You got to be careful with these witness testimonies.
You're right. Tell. I had a reliable source.
You sound like a paranormal investigator now.
I know, he was a scientist too, so I had to take what he said seriously. No, it was definitely worth listening to, because then when I actually did listen to it, I realized that there, we shouldn't assume, right? We should consider all options and not assume the worst. And skeptics are extremely guilty of assuming the worst. Or assuming the wrong thing, and nobody should do that. It's just, it, you know, it makes an ass out of you and me, so.
No worries at all. No worries at all.
My favorite correspondent who sends me the best information, Jeb Card, he listens to some of these radio shows, and he listened to Banal of America. Is that how you pronounce it, Tim Banal? I never listened to it, but.
No idea.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Look, Todd. I know you're a big conspiracy theorist, okay? And you believe everything, man.
It's not
you're
true.
So naive, man.
There are no aliens in Roswell, and contact lenses aren't made out of amoebas.
They are,
they
too,
are,
dude.
Hey, did you see that?
What?
Chupacabra. He just ran down the aisle, Todd.
You better find him.